590, The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Coming off what was an exciting weekend for non-Toronto teams. See how our buddy Justin Bourne's feeling. Optimistic, pessimistic. Either way, he's our insider. That's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne. Good morning.
Good morning, Ailish. I got to say, really lovely to hear your voice. I was anticipating being like having a bunch of steak tied to me and being thrown to JD after that Leafs game.
I'm sure it's coming, but yeah, you know, we've talked it through a little bit. We're trying to decide if we're at all able to pull any positives out of the weekend. How do you balance, you know, a pretty good win and a pretty awful loss?
Well, I guess there's the logical way to do it, but I think we've lost the point of doing logical with this Leafs team. Like, I find it really hard to sit here and be like, well, they got the split and they're heading back home and they got home ice. And
like
they
Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah. You know, I saw those quotes after the game and I was like, there must be some strategy there, because that you don't believe that, Sheldon. No one believes that there was any positives after last night. So, I don't know. I guess I'm back where everyone is with this Leafs team, which is just, is it happening again, or is there going to be another, you know, is this group going to find it? Are they going to be different in some way? Because last night was really disheartening for all the "are they different this year" conversations we've had.
Yeah, for those of you that weren't listening earlier when we played the clip, Keefe after the game said, quote, "We came on the road here, we got a split. We came out of here, it was a best of five series with three games in this building and two at home. Now it's a best of three with two in our building, so it's a successful road trip in that sense," end quote. The quote looks ugly.
It actually, in that sense, is doing heavy lifting, huh?
Yeah, and it doesn't sound better either. It's not one of those, oh, but if you heard it, his inflection, it's like, nah, it's all kind of bad. I get it. I defended him in saying that what's he supposed to do in this situation, bury his team and say it's over and that we blew it? No, he's got to be optimistic, sort of like John Cooper was in those last two games. You're right. There's a strategy element to it, but it's tough to hear that quote when you're a Leaf fan and you know this entire season has been geared towards, as I put it earlier, killer instinct, right? This was the buzzword. We need to add killer instinct, killer instinct, killer instinct. And here you have an opportunity to show that off, and you lay an absolute egg. And it's really, really tough to look at this and say it's going to even be the same way in game five, right? That's not the elimination game. That's the front runner game. What do you think it is about this group where just like, where do you lay the blame? Like, how do you feel about just this growth opportunity of the ability to close with these guys? Because again, they were up on Montreal, they were up on Boston, and it is the same core and they've gotten older. They had real chances to close against Columbus, never did it. 3 years in a row now where they just cannot find those ways to step on their opponent's throat when they get the opportunity to.
You know, there's like a gifted child element of it, I think, where like when things can be easy for them, they just, they want to see how little they can try and still have success. And I know that's just like a mass psychology generalization I'm making there, but it's just played out for years now. This is not some small sample. We have regular season examples of when it goes well for them for a little while, then all of a sudden it's just like, all right, we'll coast and we'll see if we can get one. The thing with hockey is you can sometimes. You don't always have to be your best. Sometimes it just goes your way. And I'm not saying that they thought last night was going to go their way, but there was no doubt that they were underprepared for what a defending Stanley Cup champion with, for what they were going to, what was going to come at them. And I just think this learning curve of has gone on long enough where it's like the playoffs are legitimately harder. As even though you've been the best player everywhere you've ever played, it's going to get challenging. You're going to have to be, it's going to push you. And there was just, you know, maybe they would never have won last night even if they had brought their best game. Sure. Tampa Bay was amazing, but really disheartening that they came out. And I'll be honest, watching Giordano and Hall play catch behind the net and like the lack of urgency on getting the puck out of the zone to start the game was like, what did you expect to be coming once that puck dropped last night?
Yeah, I agree. There was, it's like, losing to Tampa Bay was inevitable, right? Not just that, not last night, but I just mean in general. You were never going to sweep this series.
Yeah.
That was never on the table. Tampa was going to win hockey games. They're an unbelievably good team. But yeah, sorry, style points matter with this group. Like, I don't know how they couldn't. And that's why I'm a little spooked and why I think everyone's spooked and why you would think that that team has to be feeling this as well is like, you got to be looking around the room a little bit right now saying, oh my God, here we go again. Is this possible? Like, Matthews has not been forceful in the series. Tavares has been a ghost. Nylander hilariously gets two goals in that game. He was arguably the team's worst player. Like, there's never been someone less deserving of a two-goal game than William Nylander last night. Like, truly, truly, truly. There are Toronto dads everywhere that had heart palpitations watching William Nylander's game yesterday. It was just a tough one. Like, for that entire team, for them to show no urgency, to show no resolve, to show no fight back, to no pride, no energy throughout that entire hockey game was deplorable for them. Like, truly, truly deplorable. So before we move on to those guys, before we start talking about like the individuals that are going to impact this series the most, I do want to finish with Keith, because you are the Keith Whisperer as the only resident of the station that's worked with him. And I wonder how you evaluate the adjustments and his coaching and the preparation and how much you lay at his feet for this game and this series so far.
Well, I'll tell you, last night, going into last night's game, I thought he'd had a really good series, was really good at, I thought the matchup game, and I really liked the lineup construction. I was fully on board with starting with some heaviness in the lineup and then assuming it would taper off. And like, I've liked it. I said going into last night's game that that was my favorite Leafs lineup of the season. I liked all four lines. I liked the pairs. I agreed with every decision. I was like, I love it. And then that happened. I thought last night in the game, was really disappointed to not see, okay, can we get Marner with Tavares? It's 5-0. Can we have a look at something different in that respect? I thought the Matthews line, really disappointing at how badly they got owned by Killorn and Point and that group, but they just never found a way to get away from them either, which you have to do by splitting them up on the road when the other team doesn't have the matchup, or when the other team has the matchups. They were out-attempted. So shot attempts when the Matthews-Marner group was on the ice, out-attempted 15-1 by the Point line over those two games. Like, this is two series in a row now where that top group has gone up against a line designed to shut them down and failed. So, I don't know. That doesn't say nothing either.
So, obviously, after a loss that bad, Keith could sit there with a lot of different things. And you've been in the room with him in these situations and have an idea of what he might be looking at. I have a couple of tactical things I wanted to throw by you, but I'll start by just asking, what do you think he's focusing on? Because, obviously, the energy and the force you play with and things like that, all of that is going to be a talking point. But what's he bringing up in the film room? Because it felt like games 2 and 4 were really, really easy for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think it's retrievals to breakouts. You know, he talked about in a quote before game 3 how when you don't get back on a puck and get it up out of your end, he said the second your breakout takes less, you know, about 10 seconds, you're in your own zone for a minute. Like, that's just the way it is with this Tampa Bay team, is you kind of have one chance to go back, make that touch to the right place, you know, get up and out of the zone, get going the other way, or else that forecheck comes and they get possession, and then they start to spread you out, and you're just not going to touch the puck. Once they've got you spread out in the D zone, it's over. So I think for them, they want to spend less effort on, okay, in zone defensively, here's where we want guys to stand. It's a lot more like, let's not be in our zone. The same way that the Leafs penalty kill was so effective in game 1 because they didn't spend time killing penalties in their own end. They have to stop Tampa Bay before they even get to where they're dangerous.
So what does that look like, though? Because right now the Leafs have had a lot of trouble with Tampa's zone entries, and they're playing their defensemen pretty far back in the zone, I think because they're worried they don't have the speed to keep up with Tampa's forwards. But then you mentioned it earlier, Giordano and Hall are pinned in, passing the puck back and forth, unable to get it up the boards. What does that tweak look like for you? Is it more aggression at the blue line when they're trying to come over?
No, that's so, you know, those things are related. So if they put higher emphasis on retrievals, their D are probably cheating back a half a step or two, which is makes them more likely to give up the blue line. The only way to make that harder for them is more back pressure from the forwards. You have like a third forward high. You have guys coming back. This has got to be like, there can't be a huge gap between your D and your forwards. And so it's you know, I hate to say it's effort, but it is. It's like, all right, you know, you lose possession in the offensive zone. You need to be rushing back to your own end. Like, it's a breakaway. Like, guys have to be coming back at full tilt to support the D there.
Well, I mean, not to start to try to play coach, because that's not what I am, but one of the big advantages everybody thought Toronto was going to have in this series was was rush play, right? Tampa really struggled off the rush down the stretch, and Toronto excelled, and it looked like their blue line had gotten better. And now all of a sudden you have Lyubushkin and Riley getting killed in transition. You have, obviously, Hall and Giordano, who looks like, you know I'm as big a Gio fan as anybody. He's looked like he's been stuck in cement this series. Like, the foot speed is now really starting to show itself again on plays like this. And the lack of detail from some of the forwards in this series, especially to start that game yesterday, where, like, everyone got so mad at Justin Hall for turning the puck over behind the net on that first goal. And I went, well, you know, there's a forward that's supposed to be there. Like, where
he's just flying the zone.
Yeah. Like, where the hell was Kasha? Like, you know, I still looked at that play. I watched it like three times over and I went, what was Kasha doing? Like, for the forwards on this team to be playing that way, and again, attention to detail, and as a group, and how prepared are you? There were moments where I just went, what the hell is happening? Like, how can you have these types of mistakes at this juncture against that team in this situation? Like, it's hard to process that stuff.
Yeah, it is. You know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, you know, some of these guys who just were hurt and came back to play, Kasha being one, Bunting has had no juice, and that's led to some different looking lines, you know, like, yeah. Bunting hasn't played with that group and Kasha hasn't played with his, you know, you go back and forth throughout the season. Is the familiarity so important, but you also want to try things? I don't think we had seen these looks, and I don't know if that's related at all, but part of it might just be bad timing that those guys, they don't have everyone at their best right now. I don't know. And you know, we talk about all this stuff, JD, like, I'm not sold that the puck drops tomorrow night and they're great again.
No.
Like, this, it's just, it's the way this series has been, with no game being remotely close. It might work in the Leafs' favor in that it's not some every game is a grinded out, like, you know, they got last night off. Yeah. You know, it could be an advantage for this team. I don't know. It's tough to get to see if this is going to lead to anything.
Did they ever have last night off? Like, when they put in Schalgren, some of the shifts that they were turning, like some of these guys were doing, it was shameless. Like, not skating, just, oh my God, some of that play was just horrific. Like, truly, truly embarrassing stuff from them. So, yeah, they better come out with a lot of jump in Game 5 because, yeah, you're right. Basically, from, what, the second period onward, they just said, yeah, it's fine. Like, we're just going to not play hockey anymore. Like, we're just not going
to
try.
I don't think Keith had a lot of video work. He had to watch 25 minutes of the game. You don't need to watch the last 35. Nothing meaningful happened.
Nope, absolutely not. That's why, again, also, like, some criminal stuff from the officials. I'm like, please just let this game play out, guys. Why are we calling every ticky-tack penalty in a 5-0 game? This is just excruciating. Whatever mandate the NHL has done, it's like you decided that your mandate was going to be have the officials involved to the degree where now we're going to know the crews, like in the NBA. Good job. Like, good, really good job by the NHL on that one. Okay, so ultimately, a lot of this stuff that we're discussing and nitpicking over, like, okay, Keefe, right? Right, what, like, is he doing? Right, it's Sheldon Keefe. The goaltending has been whatever from Jack Campbell. I think that he had some brilliant moments in Game 3, but last night was rough, and on balance, it's been pretty meh. Like, your blue line, whatever, whatever. This Maple Leafs team is built on one idea, and that's they're going to have four forwards that are discernibly better than any other team's four forwards. And it hasn't felt that way through the series. And obviously, you know, Tavares has absorbed a lot of press clippings, as he should. He's been a complete non-factor in the series. Same with William Nylander, as we've kind of gone over. I think Marner has been pretty quality, especially when you consider the penalty kill element of his game and what he's being asked to do. But you look across the board at Austin Matthews' numbers now in this series. The two goals in the first game, okay, good. Nice that he was able to establish himself early. But go across and look at the sample of the nerd stats, and there will be one thing that really sticks out to you. One is that 5-on-5, his numbers are not good. Like, his numbers are not good. And his high danger chances, 4%, are, like, shockingly not good for Austin Matthews. He has had 89% of his zone starts in the offensive end, and yet there are more high danger chances against him when he's been on the ice 5-on-5 than 4. What have you just thought about Matthews over the last few games, and what needs to change?
You know, I think there's such a focus on last year and not getting enough points. I really think that that's how he feels he's judged. You know, watching the way that he plays, you know, I can see I don't see stops and starts. Like, he's trying to, like, keep his momentum going in the D zone and hoping to get the chance to go the other way and go on a rush. And, you know, sometimes there just needs to be more patience, and it's not going to come for you every shift. And I've been trying to watch his game, be like, why is he getting so badly, you know, basically outnumbered more than anything. It's not like you watch shift and, you know, think, boy, that was awful. But he didn't seem comfortable holding onto the puck last night. He didn't seem comfortable, you know, as I mentioned, no stops and starts, everything kind of moving and flowing and looking for that next chance to go the other way. You know, I think he's got 6 points in the series. I don't think the Leafs need him to score 12 points in the series for them to win the series. They need to win his ice time. And I'm sure that's something that they're going to have that conversation with him about, that, you know, it's not just about these numbers. We need you to be doing the right things, because you're playing the most really reliable, effective two-way line, one of the few in the league anyway. So, yeah, for me, just no cheating.
Well, I would agree. I would say that his best game was the one they lost in game two.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. They definitely, I want to say he's got worse every game. Maybe not a bright thing, but I don't think he's been good in Tampa Bay. He was much better in Toronto.
Do you think part of that is Tampa Bay doing a good job limiting him on the power play? I know you and I texted a little bit after game one that they were kind of defending the Matthews part of the power play differently than we'd seen other teams do so far. And it looks like the Leafs have tried to adjust around that. But Matthews really, like you'd expect, even if the 5-on-5 play wasn't there, the power play time would look more comfortable for him, and it hasn't. So do you give an element of credit to Tampa Bay giving him something he hasn't been able to figure out, or is this much more on Matthew's shoulders for you?
Well, I give them credit for defending him very well and making it challenging on him. You know, the other element of that is, okay, so what's Matthews going to do? He might win the Hart Trophy this season. You know, what are you going to do to adjust when the other team adjusts? And I know you guys are going to agree with this. How did he not shoot the hockey puck a couple of times last night?
Oh,
like,
boy.
He's Austin Matthews. He's got this great shot. They're covering you really well. You're not getting many looks. Take him when you got him. Like, Vasilevsky has not looked unbeatable in this series. I just can't believe he passed the puck back a few times. Or it was like, hey, someone tell him he's number 34 out there.
Yeah. That's what I find the most troubling is I had multiple conversations with people who said, is he hurt? And I go, You can't have people asking that question about you.
The worst
question.
Either
way, it's bad if people think that. Like, there was that one power play that they had earlier in the game, he bobbled the puck 3 different times. And I went,
he kept trying to force it to Tavares in front of the net, who wasn't available.
Yeah, it was not a pretty night for Austin Matthews. And again, like, this just kind of gets me back to the same thing, where it's like, it's to me, it's all 4 of those guys in concert, right? The balance of those 4 players. And, like, yes, the Tavares-Nylander element of this has been disastrous. And I don't even know what you do with those 2 guys at this point, because it's like splitting them up. What do you do? Like, on the road, I actually kind of was hoping that in that last game, Keith was going to put mix it up and have Marner go with Tavares and just say, let's just see what this looks like again. Like, let me just see on a road what happens if we split these guys in a game where there's nothing left to be really gained from it. But the proposition of this team, again, is that those 4 would be dominant. Those 4 would be unequivocally the best 4 forwards on the ice because they are paid to do so. And in this series, it's like, no, the best 4 forwards have been on Tampa's side. Like, on balance, you can look across and it's like, it's Point, it's Killorn, Stamkos. Like, Kucherov hasn't even been good in this series, and he's been way better than either Tavares or Nylander have been. Like, it's just, this is a tough look for the philosophy of the Maple Leafs, regardless of their opponent. Like, of course it's a hard dog test. Of course it's the Tampa Bay Lightning, but it shouldn't look quite like this. Like, you need to be more forceful than this.
Tampa is one of the few teams that I think can go 4 forwards deep with Toronto. I would say that one thing that, if there's a key failing so far to me, I would like to see Nylander, Tavares together at home, where you can choose where you put them on the ice, and apart in Tampa, where they're not going to worry about matching 3 lines, and you at least get one of those guys away from one of Tampa's top 6 guys. I feel like there was the wrong place to have those guys together. The team has typically looked best with those guys not on the same line. I won't be surprised if those guys are not on the same line. And if Kyle Clifford is back in the next game, knowing that Sheldon thinks that their 4th lines have looked best with him a part of it, Spets has done nothing for me so far.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about that 4th line. I'm glad you mentioned it. But What you do with it.
I don't know. You know, that's the thing, right? Spetz has just kind of been out there, and I understand he's got a few handles on the power play where he's, you know, wound up to take slap shots or whatever, but I would rather had Kyle Clifford put some guys through the boards a few times over the past couple of games, particularly the end of that game last night. Like, guys, Pierre, like, Brandon Hagel's 5'10". He wants to fight you. You just lost by four. I don't know, man. Maybe that's the time. So,
well, it's certainly not the time to just look at him and keep your gloves on and just look like you're the softer of the two guys and that you're getting pushed around. Like, that's just not a good look. And listen, I advocated for those guys to come out of the lineup because they had hurt the Toronto Maple Leafs and that those penalties, I thought, the 9 minutes against on the power play. But that's, listen, the only path forward, it seems, for the Leafs right now is to win using the power play. Like, they're going to need their special teams to be better, and they're going to need to draw penalties because 5-on-5 through four games, the story of this series has been the Leafs are not as good. Like, that's just the way it is. Go up and down. You can find one line that has been positive 5-on-5, and that's the Kampf line that everybody loves. They've had some great transition offense, but the idea that that's supposed to be your secondary scoring is not sustainable, in my opinion. You're going to need more from your top six, and finding ways to get them into more advantageous spots or getting them going, like, that's the key to this series. Because again, this is I thought that there might be a game script where you lose to Tampa and you go, hey, well, whatever, you're still running this thing back. You lose it like this, and that's absolutely done. That's absolutely finished. Something of significance is obviously going to have to change with that group. I'm looking at Keith right now, and it's odd because if you have those two guys specifically, Tavares and Nylander, giving you what they're giving you, and you're having to try to shuffle your lineup to try and find things from them, it's tough for me not to look at that already and say, well, that should be impacting the way that you feel about this offseason almost regardless of what happens here now.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And you sort of have those conversations when you see how this thing plays out. The whole conversation's about killer instinct. Like, there's still time here. There's still time for those guys to have big moments and big games and, you know, show that it's just been tough so far. But, yeah, as of right now, there's no doubt that when you're forcing yourself to jumpstart guys and find players for your expensive guys, it's not a good start.
Borny, good start by you today on the hit. Good close. Good job. You did great. Thanks for jumping up and doing the earlier slot today, buddy. Be well.
No problem. Thanks, team. Enjoy.
See you, pal. Justin Bourne of Real Kipper and Bourne, NHL and Sportsnet, all those things. I actually think that the Leafs should consider giving Nylander a look on the top line and put Kerfoot back down with Tavares. Those two guys don't really work together. They haven't all year long. And yeah, I don't care that they scored those nothing goals at the end of the game. I'm sure some of you do, but no, that was an absolute zero impact in that game. Like, I had one guy tweet at me about, like, Vasilevsky, Sir Pierce. I was like, that was the most score effects of all score effects games. I'm not reading anything into the way Tampa performed in the third or the way that Toronto scored a couple of goals in that third. I would just be looking at trying to get Nylander engaged by being up top. Because Bunting doesn't have it in this series. Like, that's pretty clear. But Bunting belongs where he's belonged, which is down in the fourth line. And I actually don't mind him there. If that's going to be the group that tries to draw penalties, Bunting, Blackwell, Clifford, sure. It's hard to justify keeping Jason Spezza in there after that last game. Like, when he took that penalty, I went, that's the one thing that you were here not to do. And you did it. So what are you doing? You're supposed to be the veteran conscience of this team that's not going to be making mistakes, and you make a mistake like that, there's no real defending it. I think ultimately Spezza is better. Like, I liked yesterday's lineup. That's the one that I would probably still be deploying, but yeah, I can't really debate a guy coming out of the lineup after a penalty like that or giving Clifford another look, especially given how it went early in the series. Just either way, I think all this stuff that we're talking about, it really just does come down to what is Toronto's top four going to do over the course of these next potentially three games? Because if they continue to play the way that they've been playing so far in the series on a whole, then I don't think there's going to be those four guys back next year. And I think that that this is going to ultimately be looked at. I'm sorry, but it's a failure. They can't get out of the fourth or the first round this many years in. It's a cataclysmic failure.
You can't be the team that builds around having the best top four and then 6 years in a row, your best top four either don't get it done or aren't the best top four in the series.
It was one when it's like, hey, well, they're young, and now all of a sudden, what is it supposed to be? And Tavares aged quite a bit, but holy hell, somebody figure something out here. Let's take a break. Still 2-2. A lot of the other series 2-2. Okay? Still can win. Lots of time for you guys to figure this out. More optimism maybe a little bit tomorrow or with some of our other guests when I get defensive with our Tampa Bay people. I have the bone to pick of all bones to pick with the world of sports betting, and I actually think it's like the most justified thing I've ever done on the show. That's next in the Wake and Rake. JD Blake and Ayler, Sports at 5-9 of the Fan.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. JD Blake and Ailish. Happy Monday morning. Let's get this bread this week. Look at that bag, King. It's been a while since we've said that, and I hate it. But JD, I know you set it up. You teased us. You said that you have the biggest rant or the biggest bone to pick with sports betting books. Let's let you air your grievances. Have your little session. We'll give you a little bit of therapy afterwards.
Your little session. Anytime anybody
lengthy
says your
session.
Little anything, no, but they go, oh, let me have your little breakdown. Let me have your little it's like the most.
I didn't mean it that way.
You're dead. You're dead on arrival.
okay, bye.
I actually think that this is a serious thing for the sports betting world and for the sports world at large. And the NBA has become the criminal offender of this because I believe this is the third time now in the postseason that this has happened. And it's why if you're an NBA bettor tonight, you can have zero confidence in betting the Golden State Warriors Memphis Grizzlies line until it's just about tip-off tonight. I know that Devin Booker it happened with, and now it happened with Joel Embiid. I can't remember the third example, Blake. Do you remember what the third one was or if it was just those two?
Not off the top of my head, but okay. I swear there was one.
Okay, so
the
NBA,
Heat, maybe?
The NBA has fined the Philadelphia 76ers $50,000 for not reporting in an accurate and timely manner the injury status of Joel Embiid. When we did our Wake and Rake on Friday, I picked the Miami Heat to win. And if you recall, the entire discussion around my pick was that Joel Embiid was not playing in that game. At that point in the day, he had been ruled out. Out. The day of a game, Joel Embiid had been ruled out. By come 12:30 in the afternoon, and again, this is a 7 o'clock tip, come 12:30 in the afternoon, his status is upgraded to doubtful. Then there is a report from Shams Charania that says that there is optimism within the 76ers organization that he's going to try and play. Joel Embiid wore a mask. He was always going to play. This was tactics by the Philadelphia 76ers trying to throw off their opponents, much like it was when the Phoenix Suns did it in their elimination game against the New Orleans Pelicans, where they threw Devin Booker into the lineup last minute and said, oh, whoopsie, he actually is available to play. We've seen teams do this in the past, and normally this was just a point of frustration. But here's the thing. You can't run gambling ads on every single major television network. You can't have gambling now be a part of sports broadcasts and then have it be this way with sports bettors where teams are playing coy and teams are doing this with injury statuses to impactful players. We're talking about probably the MVP of the season, a guy who swings the total, or sorry, not just the total of this game, the actual point spread of this game by around 7 points. And having that update come later in the day after there is a status of out. And I'm not even really sure what the solution is because I think a fine of $50,000, the Sixers are laughing their asses off. They're going, are you kidding? Do you know what we're going to get in an extra gate revenue? Like now we automatically have another playoff game. And it's not the only reason that we're going to get it, but they absolutely will take a $50,000 fine for their opponents not to know the injury status of a star player heading into a game or preparing for a reality where there is no Joel Embiid. So throwing off the markets, throwing off sports bettors has actually become more important now than a team's ability to throw off their opponent with a tricky injury status, which was always kind of a shady way of doing things anyways, which even before this, like gambling still was a thing. It just hasn't reached this level of prominence. And Blake, I know that we've talked about things like integrity fees. I actually don't see how those play in here. I think that this is just a team-run decision where they automatically knew they were going to get slapped with $50,000. And like Blake ended up with a push on Friday on our wake and rake. It was a very strange wake and rake. But I had a lot of people reaching out to me. Are you still on Philly? And it's like, no, of course I'm not on Philly anymore. Like the point of the bet was that there was no Joel Embiid. And I am furious that this ended up happening, not just like for the wake and rake listeners, because whatever, like everybody should have been able to kind of adjust accordingly or potentially cash out or whatever, like I did to a degree. But this has to stop. Like the NBA has now had this multiple times in the postseason, and this has actually become a major, major issue across the sport.
So, yes, the integrity fees thing, that's a macro solution to, or not even solution, but that addresses a more macro thing of how do we ensure that sports are on the up and up overall, and they're getting enough of a taste of this that we can be relatively certain they're operating above board. That doesn't really solve these micro decisions, and these fines aren't enough. Obviously, no. That needs to be renegotiated among owners or whatever, what the allowable fine is. But the more direct solution, and this doesn't solve everything because it'll push it from the way things are now to like the New England Patriots style of everyone is questionable every week. But if a player is listed out at any point, he shouldn't be allowed to play.
No.
That's it. The designations are supposed to be roughly out is 0% chance he's playing, doubtful is 25%, questionable is 50%, probable 75%, in broad, rough terms. If a player is listed as out, he should be out. And I know you don't want to do that too aggressively because obviously it's better for the league if Joel Embiid plays than if he doesn't. But don't list him as out then. List him as doubtful if there's any chance that he's going to come back. And it's not like you have to list these things 5 days in advance, like in the NFL. You got to list it like 24 hours prior. You should know if there's a non-zero chance a guy's going to play.
He was listed as out the day of the bet.
Yes, the morning of.
Listen, I want my pick expunged from the record because it's really like it's out for a player.
Blake can only do that when it's his pick.
No, but this is
the
actually
spreadsheet doesn't work that way.
This is actually one that's egregious because again, this is the fine, and this is the thing that I cannot stand about this out status thing is that you would put a bet in based on someone being placed as out. That's very clear and obvious. Like, there would be obvious people that would do such a thing like that. There's cash-out penalties, even if you do end up cashing out. And a lot of books actually will lock bets like this and not even allow you to get back whatever money that you even have put in. Of course, like, sports betting isn't right before a tip-off. It's about buying a line at the appropriate time. And the appropriate time to buy that line was that morning at that time before it started to move in the direction of what would have been the Miami Heat had it gotten later in the day. So, now, like, again, whatever. You can expunge it, you cannot. I think that it actually should be from our record because it is a joke and it obviously didn't end up being an official pick. But I don't think that the measure that you're talking about, Blake, about the out thing is enough because my fear is exactly what you said, that we're going to start to see more doubtfuls all of a sudden on these lists.
But at least then, as bettors, you'd know to hold, right? You'd hold off on that decision.
You would know to hold, but they've got to have more injury transparency, period, across these leagues. And Joel Embiid had to put a mask on, right? Like, this wasn't something that they didn't know. This was clear, clear, clear skirting of the rules. And so a $50,000 fine, I'm sorry, is just, it's completely out of whack with what this actual penalty was based on the amount of money that ended up going in. And like, you need to look like you are fully transparent and you are above board as these leagues. Like, I've always said people are going to bet on sports regardless. Like, you could tell people that they're rigged and people would still do it. Like, they would still just be looking for whichever team is going to have it rigged for them. This isn't the major issue. But if you are going to purport this industry as legitimate, then you have to have the sports leagues bought into that as well. You can't have this. Like, you genuinely cannot have this. So I think it's a black eye for the NBA that this has happened multiple times over the course of the NBA playoffs with some of the faces of the league. And it's, again, why tonight, if you're betting on this Golden State Warriors game, I would say absolutely not do it because the precedent for these teams has been set. Say that a player is out, upgrade them to doubtful in the middle of the day, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they're completely fine and ready to rock and roll for a game.
Jake from Minnising just texted in a similar grievance. You can always text him 590-590. He said, same with the NHL starting goalies. Everything's a secret until it's too late and you never know who may start. Drives me insane. Screws betting as well as fantasy sports. Got to change.
Nah, that's not the same. Sorry. Goaltenders in hockey being revealed, it's like that's a time-honored tradition. That's an up-and-down whatever. Like, you don't have to reveal your starting goaltender, just like you don't have to reveal your starting lineup or who's actually in it. Like, that's actual strategy. We're talking about an integral player who they're saying is listed as out. If they said the goaltender is out of the game and then the goaltender starts and is fine, then we're relating to that. But no, the NHL can reserve the right to have their goaltenders not listed until later in the day. Oftentimes now organizations are split about the two goaltenders who they're going to be. So yeah, no, this is, sorry, was it Jake? It's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very, very, very clear line of delineation between these two. And yeah, it was Nikola Jokic was the other one. Thank you, Ailish, for grabbing that one.
Yes. Also, the news is that Jokic has won the MVP per Adrian Wojnarowski. So, karma, Joel Embiid, there you go. You fake your injury status. Woj gets the nugget that you didn't win the MVP. Take that. Honestly, the biggest surprise here, and this came up, I remember we had a Wake and Break segment during the regular season. Mm-hmm. And I had said that something's up here, something's fishy with a Raptors-Bucks line. And it ended up being that night where Giannis was quote-unquote active but didn't start and didn't play.
Right.
And so my biggest surprise here is that the Vegas line had not accounted for the possibility at all of Joel Embiid playing, and usually that's where we can get the hint about this stuff, is the line looks off by a point or two or three. So that's the biggest surprise here, that one didn't get to the bookmakers.
I loved that it got leaked with the Sham Sharania as he's doubtful. There's growing optimism, as though in any way that wasn't the plan all along, or that Joel Embiid's face, like he woke up that morning with concussions and with the fractured orbital, and it was, you know what, around noon today, there's all of a sudden this growing optimism amongst the Sixers, like the way that it was, as though that wasn't an immediate, this guy's playing tonight. Like, the most shocking result of the weekend would have been had Joel Embiid actually not played that game. So I don't have a solution for the NBA. I like Blake's idea that if you list someone as out, they're out the day of. Like, that you certainly can't do the clear jump, because I think that's the biggest issue I have with this. But yes, the fines need to be greater. They need to be actually something that would affect an owner and the decision of the organization to do this. Like, it has to be a penalty for these things that is bigger, that is greater. There has to, I think, be a third party that looks into these things, or at least has
they
some
lose
kind
all
of
their
measure.
Draft picks.
Well, yeah, I think that would probably create a larger controversy, but
a little bit.
Yeah, I just can't believe that this has not been figured out, and this kind of shows you about like how some of this was rushed in the sense of, man, you went into doing these rules without having all the players in all these leagues on board with what exactly their end was going to be. And you also went into this without clear guidelines as to what the NFL has already done this, right? Like, they've already gone through this. They're the most prepared out of all the leagues to have it. But the NBA looks woefully underprepared, and they look embarrassing right now. This has been an embarrassment for them because, again, this is a huge, 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 huge part of the business now. All right, moving on. Okay, Blake, sorry.
I was going to say, so the Memphis Grizzlies and Golden State Warriors is not your Wake and Break pick for tonight with John Morant out.
No, they are not. They are not. And honestly, I say that it's a zero confidence pick right now because you have to actually wait until tip-off for this thing to happen. Anyways, awful. Awful, awful, awful stuff from the Philadelphia 76ers. Awful stuff from the NBA. And I feel for any sports bettor that actually had that in and was not able to withdraw it in time. Okay, so quickly before we move on to our picks, I just want to say, if you haven't seen it, you really do have to go watch the Kentucky Derby race. Like, you just, it's available everywhere to watch it, but I'll never understand how Rich Strike was able to come back. Like, watching that race is breathtaking. And knowing that it's an 80-1 as you're watching it is just truly, like, It's gorgeous.
Even if that guy was the favorite and he started where he started, it would have been impressive. But the fact that this guy waltzes in 30 seconds before the cutoff and wins the Kentucky Derby is just
but the race itself is one of the most aesthetically pleasing things that you can see. Like, truly, the above shot of that race and showing where Rich Strike is and knowing where Rich Strike is, seeing that horse get that inside track and then just gallop its way, like weaving through the, it's truly beautiful.
There's that moment when Rich Strike's coming up, and I want to say it was like to push into pole position, but the horse has to do like an in and out around, like you're like your Frogger or like doing, you're in traffic. And it's just like, it's so smooth and it's such a narrow thing that like, I don't know. I don't watch a ton of horse racing, but the fact that they pulled that off, I say they as in terms of the jockey and the horse. I don't know who you give credit for on stuff like that. I don't know if you work the horse in a narrow little gap. Is that the jockey? Is that the horse? I don't know. But it's pretty incredible to watch from the overhead view.
Yeah. Okay. So no Leafs, no Blue Jays. Odd night. But I actually love the board, which is terrifying, which means that I'm either going to be rich or completely destitute come tomorrow. So I actually, today I have a multitude of picks. So I am fully, fully willing to sacrifice. I'm probably going to throw out some bonus picks, much like the UFC weekend ended up being pretty profitable, again, with old Charles Oliveira coming through. I did have Rose Namajunas by decision, so that was a little disappointing. But everything else was pretty much a hit, including the Michael Chandler by
finish. Did the guy not making weight influence your betting when you heard that, or did you just that you were not fazed?
It depends on the it depends on the context sometimes. In that case, I didn't, because the reports were that like he had made weight on his digital scale and there was something off with the main scale and all that nonsense.
Or not even just that, but like the mental side of it going in.
Yeah, so sometimes if someone misses weight and a fight has to be fought at a catch weight, it usually becomes a no bet for me, because there's two things going on. The person who didn't make weight probably had a really grueling weight cut and they're not in the best of conditions. But also,
it depends. That can go either way, though. Sometimes they don't cut and they just take the penalty to win.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. And then you're entering that fight heavier. Now, I will say it's a pretty good chunk of your purse. So you have to be pretty certain you're not going to make weight and just
But it's worked out for Mackenzie Dern, for example. It's like one of those, you know what? It's one of those long run plays where you go, okay, well, I'm going to sacrifice a purse. But guess what? Sometimes in the UFC, they're not making very much money, and you can build your name up.
20% of nothing is nothing.
Is nothing, exactly. And so it can actually work out. That was obviously not this case, because Charles Oliveira's lost his like championship purse. It was a dreadful thing for it to happen to him. But I liked his skill set. The way that it matched up with Justin Gaethje's was always a problem for Gaethje. And you saw that like immediately in the fight. It was an awesome start to that fight. Like, boy, that was so exciting. Especially to go from like the Namajunas fight to that, where they were just trading shots. And it was just in the clinch, like everything up close and nasty. Like the bookending of the finish of
Chandler.
Of Chandler to the finishing of Oliveira with the Rose Namajunas fight in the middle is like, oof, that's a... I got the bends watching those two things happen. Okay, Ailish Forfar, what is your best bet of the night and why?
Yeah, so love the NHL games tonight. Same. I think that Calgary-Dallas series has been one of my favorites to watch. Just
insane amount of money on Calgary.
Well,
because
if you're not betting on it, watching it has been really exciting. I'm loving that. And Avalanche, Predators, I mean, they have a chance to sweep tonight. Those games have been high scoring, so an over there would be good. But I'm going to do something I haven't done, I don't think, on the Wake and Rake, is bet the under in the Flames-Stars game. It's been so tightly matched, 1-0, 2-0, and last time 4-2. But the over I have is over under 5.5. I like that a lot. I think that it's just going to be a tight game once again. And Dallas leads 2-1, so I think Calgary could tie it up. I'm not going to bet the outcome of this game, but I am going to bet that it's going to be a tight game. So that's my best bet for tonight, under 5.5 for Flames Stars.
Okay. That total under 5.5. Okay. Does that fits
it? I have it at under 5.5. Yep. And it's -125.
Okay, that's a good price. That's a really, really good price. I would recommend shopping that line around, because I'm looking at two books where that actually doesn't even fit the parameters Of our Waken rig.
Yeah, so, I know. I was surprised to find it at that price, and I definitely am going to bet that one.
Yeah, I actually like the Flames tonight to win this game. Like, they've been unbelievably just snake bit in the series. They've clearly been the better of the two teams. Mm-hmm. Them not protecting the lead in the last game, and Pavelski coming through with big moments. Like, Pavelski just somehow, despite being a San Jose Shark, is a sneaky, awesome playoff guy. He fits in the Logan Couture category of how are you awesome in the playoffs, yet also part of the biggest choking dog franchise that's ever existed. It's a weird dichotomy. But yeah, this is trouble for the Flames. The only reason why I'm a little cautious to bet them is that I've seen them at like minus 152 to win. I think the play is, if you're going to bet Calgary, to actually go in on them winning in regulation and not having this go, because it's plus money to win in regulation. It's minus 152 to win on the money line, and just say, hey, they're going to come through with a victory here. They're going to knot this series up. They're going to give you their best bet. If there's one theme in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far, and you saw that play out yesterday with the LA Kings, you saw it play out with the Tampa Bay Lightning, is the team with their back against the wall, if they're not completely lopsided in talent, mm-hmm. like the Preds and Avs, you're going to find a way back into the series. That this is a really competitive sport with ebbs and flows, and so that's probably some of the reason why you're optimistic as a Leaf fan. I'm also going with the NHL. I think that tonight's basketball game is an unbelievable coin toss, and that you should definitely not really feel overly strong about either side. I already mentioned why I'm not touching Grizzlies Warriors, although I think there is a little bit of value on the under with no Ja Morant in this game. I'm going with the Florida Panthers, and I hate this. I really, really hate this, because the Panthers have also bit me in the ass in the last game pretty heavily, because I played this exact same theory. But Tom Wilson likely not playing in tonight's game. If you look at the nerd stats in this series, they still tell you that the Panthers are the much better team. And I think the Panthers are the much better team. Their power play is over. Like, this is one of the most talented offensive teams in the NHL, and they can't buy a power play goal. Of course, there's a little bit of my fear of the Leaf syndrome, which is that you're the talented team, you're the front runner team that gets into the playoffs, and you haven't had that experience yet, and the playoff-tested Capitals are doing it, but this is just one of those regression games where I go and I look at everything that's happened in the series so far, and I say, the Cats are better. The Cats are more talented offensively, and not having a key player in the series should actually factor in for Washington at some point. So I'm going to take them to win in regulation, because it's minus 105 instead of the minus 167 number that you can just get on the money line. I just think that the Cats find a way here. I believe in the talent, so I will take them to win in regulation, a little bit of extra juice. A little bit of a better price at minus 105. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll take. I bet you can find that plus in places too.
I'm going to go with the Milwaukee Brewers. They're up against the red hot Cincinnati Reds, who have
this
won.
This is
two
a joke.
Their...
This is your whole thing now is bet against the Reds, eh? Like, you're.
I haven't bet against them yet.
Yeah. I thought you did. I thought you bet against them.
No. No, I've it's felt too cheap at times. They're 5-23. They're really bad. Luis Castillo's
run
back
line
tonight.
Or money line?
Pardon me?
Run line or money line?
They're minus 160 on the money line, so I'm going to go money line. Are you all right?
I am getting horrific prices compared to the two of you on my two
yeah,
books.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. You look at three or four things in the morning and see where the best line is. Luis Castillo's back tonight for the Reds. He would be their ace, but it's also his first start of the season. He had three rehab assignments where he didn't pitch a ton of innings and his control was really spotty. Cincinnati's bullpen has an ERA of 5, so there's not really much hope there for the bullpen holding up. They're also like by far the worst offensive baseball, and Brandon Woodruff's on the hill for the Brewers. This is baseball, so Cincinnati could win this game. It happens. But as far as baseball lines that fit within the parameters of the Waken Rake, the Milwaukee Brewers against the Cincinnati Reds is about as good as you can get.
Boy, I will say that I have not seen quite the discrepancy in some of these lines as normal. This is today a pretty big dipper. So make sure you shop these around when you do today's Wake and Rake, that you look at some different places, because you can get a lot of good value on those Ailish and Blake picks as in compared to some of these other places. So make sure that you are looking around, as always. Always a smart play to do. Let's look around at what.
Sorry, to be clear. So the Rake and Wake for May 9th. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee Brewers, money line.
Yeah.
Calgary Flames, Dallas Stars, under 5.5. Florida Panthers in regulation.
Okay, let's do it. I feel good. This one feels good. Got to tell you. I'll tell you when I got good feelings about them. This one feels good. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's look around the Lightning side of things with Dave Anderchuk before we talk to Ryan Callahan, who's an ESPN analyst. Big Leafs Hour coming up. Place those bets. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Blake and Ehlers, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.